And welcome to Reviewing the Brew. This is a Brewers podcast. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And obviously, always, you know, this is Brewers news. And, you know, playing last night against the Astros, there's a lot to talk about in this game. You know, Randy Wolf pitched six solid innings, you know, gave up two runs, struck out four, walked four. But, you know, the big news there is Cameron Lowe and how he gave up four runs, two of them being earned.
Yeah, and that's something we talked about last week. We touched on Cameron Lowe a little bit, and you know, just not a very good game for him.
No, and it's surprising because, you know, obviously the night before, two nights before, Jose Veras, you know, had been our constant guy because Cameron Lowe was on the bereavement list. You know, Jose Veras, I think, had a ERA below two, and then he has that huge inning to where he gives up three runs. And then we had Cameron Lowe in last night, who was our second, you know, best bullpen guy, and he gives up two earned runs. So it really, you know, makes you wonder. There's not a guy on our bullpen that I believe has an ERA below three.
I think you're right about that. That's tough too, because you know, occasionally you'll inherit runners that, you know, that you'll earn that have already been on base. It's being a relief pitcher is tough, and there's no way around that. But that's still no excuse. They definitely need to put something together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what happened to Cameron Lowe. I don't know. Maybe it was a mental thing with him, you know, just his first game coming off of the bereavement list. Maybe there is some mental thing with him. Maybe he wasn't really all there. So, I mean, give him credit there, I guess. He did pitch one in the third inning. So, I mean, we still won. That's the main thing here. But the fact is, we can still win these games, you know, 9-6. But if our bullpen is still giving up runs late in the game, that's crucial.
Yeah. Absolutely, but I mean, at the end of the day, a win's a win, and sometimes you're doing more harm than good just by nitpicking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, at least, you know, Parra came in and K-Rod came in and shut it down, and Axford, you know, got the save, so great job there. Obviously, a very disastrous performance for Bud Norris from the Astros, allowed seven runs on nine hits and walked two, and, you know, I think we talked about this last week, the fact that Houston, you know, has a very different type of team. It's not so much that they lack the talent, because they do have the talent. It's just they don't put it all together. And when they do, they kind of half-ass it, I want to say.
Right.
So, I mean, Bud Norris last year had a very deceiving record. You know, Wandy Rodriguez is still a very good pitcher, you know, inside of Houston's system. But you put them in any other, you know, team, they're a fourth or fifth man easily.
Oh, right. Yeah, and that's always been... have a fairly stocked draft class. They have a very well-rounded minor league system. But they end up, you know, they have to sell away a lot of their talent, and that's pretty common for lower performing teams to have to do.
I mean, how many times have we seen Pittsburgh have to do that?
Right. You know, the Astros and the Pirates have this like fire sale at the end of every year, or right around. You know, right around the All-Star break, where they have to give up a lot of good talent. But, I mean, there's still talent there that's good. I mean, Carlos Lee can still perform, even as he's getting up in age. I don't think he's an elite-level player by any means, but he's still a high-performing player. Bogusevic is still doing well. They have pieces there that they can work with. It's just a matter of getting it all together and being able to keep it manageable from a salary standpoint.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing with Houston is they do have a lot of young players. You know, like Jordan Schaefer and Jose Altuve and Brian Bosevic. They do have a lot of young talent there that will eventually, you know, turn into something great. You know, and the addition of Jed Lowrie at shortstop, I think, really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they did have Clint Barmas, and then I think he went to the Rockies or somewhere. He's just not in Houston, I know that much.
And, yeah, I believe he is in Colorado, yeah.
And it's just... I mean, I wonder how they're going to do when they transfer to the AL West next year. Because obviously, you know, being in the NL Central, it's not really that easy. Because the Pirates are improving. You know, the Cardinals haven't skipped a beat. You know, the Cubs will eventually get to where they need to be. You know, Theo Epstein's there now, so maybe he can turn that around. The Brewers are still a constant, you know, team to watch out for, and so are the Reds. So, I mean, maybe it's the fact that Houston's in a very kind of tough division. They go to a division with Oakland and Seattle. They have a fighting chance, I believe.
They have a fighting chance to be at the top of the bottom rung of teams, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Just stay in, like, third place in that division. It won't be that hard for them.
No.
The teams like Oakland and like you'll see the Cubs do now, where they're going to try to get the most production per dollar out of their players. So they're not necessarily chasing big-time stars, but they're looking for reasonable deals with decent production.
Yeah, that's all you really can ask for from a team like that. I mean, year in, year out, Houston's always been at the bottom, but, you know, teams aren't always going to stay at the bottom. And we've seen that clearly this year with the Nationals and even Baltimore. I believe every team right now, I need to check this real quick, but I believe every team in the AL East right now, except for Boston, is 10-7. Yeah, every team except for Boston is 10-7. Would you expect that from Baltimore, Toronto, you know, still going into April? I mean, it's April 25th right now, and we're heading into May. You know, this is the warm-up month, and if this is the warm-up month and these teams are still doing well, that's going to say a lot, and that means that Houston will never always, you know, be, you know, oh, well, let's make fun of this team.
Oh, right. Well, baseball is definitely very cyclical. And you remember the Moneyball A's, where they were struggling for the bottom for a long time, and then suddenly they make the playoffs 3 years in a row. And then the Phillies for a long time were basement dwellers, and then, you know, in the kind of 90s. And then all of a sudden, you know, they start making good deals, they get a good farm system, and they're up at the top. It's the way teams work, you know. Suddenly you're flush with cash, and you know, if you play your cards right for a long enough time, you will bounce back, and Houston will. And even Milwaukee's the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like we talked about last week with all the, you know, the Ned Yost era and how he built it up, and then when Renicky comes in, you know, we make the playoffs twice, you know, in the past 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I think we can make it again this year, providing, you know, we don't have any more serious injuries.
Right.
You know, and talking about the injuries, you know, going to Chris Narvison now, you know, obviously very tough for him. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, it's just something he bounces back from. You know, it's different because it's not exactly Tommy John surgery where they just repair the ligament. I mean, he tore a rotator cuff, which I believe they had to take something out and then put it back in. And then he has to be able to move his arm from that. And that takes quite a while for, at least, you know, just a normal person to, you know, come back from. But a pitcher, that takes almost an eternity for them.
Yeah, I don't expect to be seeing a lot out of Narvison. You know, maybe some rehab starts later in the year. I know he went to go get a second opinion last week, and it wasn't any brighter news than he'd already had. But yeah, a rotator cuff is nothing to scoff at, especially for a pitcher. But he's, you know, he'll have a long road back, but remember Manny Parra had a lot of injuries as well, and he's come back, and he doesn't have the greatest stats right now, but he is, I mean, he's putting in some good performances, so.
Yeah, and I mean, that is what counts later on, is, you know, how they do rebound from that. But the thing about Narvison is, I believe he might be in the last year of his contract with Milwaukee. And, you know, if he is, or, you know, it makes me wonder whether or not they want to re-sign him next year coming off of surgery. You know, and even do all the arbitration stuff with him, you know, if need be. If they just,
right,
just want to say, well, let's just get rid of him, we have no reason for him. And, you know, this kind of brings up something that I kind of touched on months ago, you know, in one of my blogs was, okay, we now know that Narvi's out for the rest of the year. That's a given. You know,
mm-hmm.
Estrada did fairly well in his, you know, start against the Rockies Saturday. You know, obviously I think we'll probably go with Estrada, if not somebody else, you know, later in the year. But I have to ask you, Colin, what do you think, and this is just completely hypothetical, what do you think the chances would be of Milwaukee landing Roy Oswalt?
I guess it's tough. You know, it would be very difficult for us to get him. I'll put it that way, just because we have to pay a lot of people. We've given out a lot of extensions this year, and we're still working on them with Greinke and I believe Markham and. You know, we have Frankie, who's going to be getting, we're probably going to be getting compensation picks from, because he's most definitely gone at the end of this year. Roy Oswalt is, he's a pipe dream. is a great, it's a great dream to have, but I don't see it happening unless he's willing to probably take a little less.
You know, and I mean, that can't be completely ruled out of the question if he is, because, you know, the main idea of this year is trying to play, you know, suitor to Greinke and Markham, primarily Greinke in this sense. But, you know, obviously, offensively, we still have, you know, Ricky Weeks, who's still earning $11 million. You know, Ryan Braun, Corey Hart, these guys who are earning, you know, $6, $7 million or more. You know, we have them to pay, you know, even our platoon guys, you know, like Ishikawa and Asturias and Cotteris and, you know, Carlos Gomez. We have those guys to pay as well. So, I mean, ruling out signing Roy Oswalt, I'm not saying it's out of the question. It's just a question a lot farther down, I believe. Because, you know, Oswalt does want to play. And the two teams that I know that have expressed interest in him are the Cardinals and the Red Sox. And God knows the Cardinals don't need anything else.
No, I mean, Roy Oswalt, you're talking about that's... If he's going to be, like, a three in St.
Yeah, because it's just... The thing about adding Oswalt...
I'll put it that way.
Yeah, the thing about adding Oswalt in St. Louis, though, is he'd be the two, guaranteed, because with Carpenter out, you have Wainwright, and then you have Oswalt, and then probably Kyle Lohse, and then Westbrook. So, I mean, and then I think Lance Lynn's in there somewhere. So, I mean, yeah, it's possible he could sign with an NL Central team. It probably would be the Cardinals. But I was just, you know, curious about that. But, I mean, honestly, I think we'll stick with more of our homegrown talent with, you know, Estrada. And even flirt with bringing up, you know, Kinsler at some point. I think he can be a potential sleeper if we start him.
Yeah, well, we have people ready for next year for sure. And, you know, for all the people that are concerned about Marco Estrada, I know there are some grumbles about him. Really... When you look at his numbers, he's pitched 11 innings this year. He has a 2.45 ERA, which is it's the lowest on the team right now in 11 innings pitched with one start. He gave up two home runs, which is where I believe all three of his earned runs came from. And he has 16 strikeouts, which is good for fourth on the team right now. So, I mean, he's a pitcher. He was a five with the Yankees at one point. He can throw. He can be a starter. We know that. And I'm not concerned. In the short term, I'm not concerned about that. If the Brewers do decide to go for broke and try to bring Oswalt in, then Estrada can be back in the bullpen, and I have no issue with that, because then that would make Gallardo 1, Greinke 2, Oswalt 3, Markham 4, and Wolf 5, and that's an incredible pitching rotation. But again, that's purely hypothetical.
Yeah, and it's so nice to talk about that. But, you know, looking at Estrada's start, what surprises me is the fact that Reinicke pulled him after 78 pitches against Colorado, which, I mean, I kind of get since he's, you know, a bullpen guy. So, I mean, maybe he's not exactly used to pitching that long into a game. But I think regardless, you need to leave him in more than five innings. You know, if you want him to get used to starting and not blow out the bullpen that we've been trying to preserve, because God knows there's something wrong there, we need to have our starters go as long as they can. You know, Gallardo's usually an assured seven innings. You know, Greinke's an assured 7 to 8 innings. Markham, anywhere from 6 to 7. Wolf, maybe about 6. So, I mean, if we want to prep up Estrada into being a starter to take Narvi's place, he needs to pitch more than five innings, and I'm just saying this based on the one start. So I mean, obviously, Reinicke will pitch him longer.
Well, yeah, and that's something they do. You're right; it's for the preservation of his arm. It's the same way when you bring up a minor league pitcher, or you bring someone up, you know, from like Feliz in Texas. The general rule is, you know, you put him around 75, 80 pitches for his first start, regardless of how he does. And then the second one, you cap it at like 9, you know, like 85, and then you go to 90, and then you just go for broke after that. It's a common practice. It is a little more troublesome in our case because of the way the bullpen works.
Yes.
I mean, you have that to worry about, but at the same time, you don't want to sacrifice a starter for the sake of the bullpen. You know what I mean?
Yep. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense because, you know, right now, you know, we're tied with Houston 4-4. You know, Markham went five innings, allowed 3 runs on 8 hits. 4 were runs, 3 were earned. Walked 4, struck out 7. Dillard's in right now. You know, it kind of concerns me a little bit, you know, that Markham hasn't really had an easy game so far. He's been kind of, you know, 3 runs and he's good. You know, it's been kind of worrying to me because, you know, it's against teams that it really shouldn't be against. And it kind of makes me wonder when we face, you know, Philly or the Dodgers again, because he didn't pitch against the Dodgers, you know, or St. Louis or, you know, any of those teams. It makes me wonder how Markham's going to do because he hasn't faced those teams. He's faced Chicago, Atlanta, Colorado, and now Houston. 3 out of 4 of those teams don't have the greatest offense in the world, let's face it.
Well, right. But, you know, there's something – I don't think there's a whole lot wrong with the way Markham pitches. I think Sean Markham does well. I think when he starts to get when people start to rack up hits on him, obviously that goes against his confidence level. But I believe Sean Markham will turn it around. I mean, we're not talking about a whole lot of starts here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, he's always been that, you know, consummate, you know, 3.5, 3.6 pitcher throughout his entire career. So, I mean, it's to be expected of Sean Markham. But the fact is now, we don't know how Estrada is going to do as the fifth man. We know how Greinke can do, and we know how Wolf can do. Gallardo, we're going to have to skip him when St. Louis comes in this next series. You know,
right.
let's just not pitch him. So, I mean, a lot of it kind of is on Markham because he is the middle man in the rotation. He's the third guy. So, you know, obviously if we can get these kind of starts out of him, you know, to where he only has maybe 3 runs, 4 runs maximum, I think he'll be fine. But I would like to see a start out of him where he only maybe allows 1 run through 6 innings or something like that. And I'm sure we'll get that this season.
Oh, yeah. We'd...
It's just more or less trying to get him to there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, and again, you know, a lot of people will look at the record, they'll look at the ERA, and that will be everything that they need to know. You know, to know how a pitcher's doing. But, again, you look, 8 earned runs, 3 of them were home runs, which are essentially those, and those were just horribly hung pitches, which are not going to happen every time.
Yeah.
But he's also got, I mean, he has 17 strikeouts. For a guy who pitches in the lower third, and a guy that actively seeks out ground balls, I don't think he's pitching that badly. I think he's made a couple mistake pitches, and the opponent's average against him's only .225, so it's nothing stellar. It's really it's a fairly average. So I'm not sure, you know. And a lot of blame gets put on pitchers that shouldn't, and a lot of responsibility gets put on pitchers from fans mainly. And I think that's generally the case with Markham. You know, when you hang a pitch and give up a ground and you give up a home run, yeah, that's your fault. But when you dial one into the middle of the zone on a 3-2 count and they miss, then you're an incredible pitcher.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of that is, you know, trying to get those corners to get those ground ball outs because, you know, you throw, you know, a cut fastball down in the zone, you know, that's tend to be a ground ball out, and that's, you know, Markham's bread and butter. But the thing that concerns me about Markham is this start especially, he only went 5 innings and had to pitch 99 pitches to get through him. His last start, he had to pitch 105 to get through 6.
Oh, yeah, and when you have that issue, I mean, that's a big problem.
It's a bit disheartening looking at that.
Right, but I did read today, obviously there's no television for the game today, but I did read that our friend had a 9-pitch at-bat against the Astros pitcher. So, yeah, he's doing well today. pitch counts are up, and, I mean, again, when you pitch in the lower third, that's...
It's bound to happen.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get higher pitch counts because you're trying to work those lower corners and you're trying to work that lower part of the zone. And if you have an umpire who's a little more, how do I put this, a little more generous to the batter, you're going to go longer. I mean, a ground ball pitcher is a relic in today's game. It really is. And so it's difficult to watch when he doesn't have a lot of really, really stellar breaking stuff, you know, like...
Grinke or Gallardo or one of the two. And it's funny you mention umpires because Joe West is behind the plate today and that says a lot.
Right.
It really does. You know, the thing I think is interesting looking at this lineup is Ishikawa is playing first and Gamble isn't in the lineup. But Ishikawa has a home run. So, I mean...
Right.
I think that's a bit interesting. I mean, other than that, it's the typical standard lineup, you know, Weeks, you know, Gomez, Braun, Ramirez, Hart. So, I mean, and that brings me to something I wanted to talk about was the article you posted last night about realigning the lineup. And I thought it's actually kind of genius because, I mean, you know, the bullpen is having their problems. Starting pitching is still trying to get over theirs. So what can work? The offense that can work, you know,
right?
And I like the fact that you have Matt Gamble leading off. I think that is great. And you know, I see right next to Aoki. I think that's how you pronounce it, right?
Yeah, I've been meaning actually to get in touch with someone who will know the official pronunciation because some people say Aoki, some people say Aoki, and people have called him Norishka or Norichika. So Let's just call
him Nori for the sake.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that you have Nori second, and then right next to him you have Preferred. You know, I was even thinking myself, you know, Niger Morgan's been off to a slow start. You know, Carlos Gomez is kind of, you know, the him-haw guy. Why not put Nori in, you know, as a starter? You know, I don't like the fact that he's platoon.
Yeah, I think with the money we shelled out for him, it's a disservice to be having him in a platoon role and playing so infrequently. He's a corner guy by nature. He was brought up, you know, in Japan, left and right field. But he has the legs for center. He has the range for center. And he's just, I mean, he's a hitter. That's what he does. So yeah. It's difficult to understand. You know, I understand you want speed on the bases and what have you, but you have a guy who can make things happen at the plate in Nori who can move runners over, and that's the important thing. And to me, Gamble is right now playing like a consummate leadoff hitter.
Yeah, because you get Gamble on, you have Nori up, and Nori, you know, gets a single. That could potentially put Gamble on third. And then you have Burns on first and third with Hart up.
Right.
So, I mean, that's great. And I like the fact that you have, you know, the bottom three, well, excluding the pitcher, the bottom three, you know, Luke, Corey, Ramirez, and Gonzalez. That, you know, they still can hit, but you have power at the end of the lineup. And we've talked so many times before about getting guys on that can hit, and, you know, having, you know, Granke or Gallardo come up and then bunt them over.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a real shame sometimes to see what Lucroy's doing. And I understand the impetus behind it in the National League of keeping a catcher down in the lineup. But if the guy is hitting near 300, you're wasting a guy who gets on base a lot through hits at the bottom of the order.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, you know, because I just like the fact that, you know, in this lineup that you put, that we don't have Weeks leading off all the time. Because Weeks can't find the ball half the time.
He's not a leadoff hitter. There's no reason that a 30 home run guy should be leading off a game ever. I mean, I understand a run's a run, but if he has extra guys on base for his home runs, then his 30 home runs turns into, you know, 120 RBIs as opposed to, you know, 80 RBIs or whatever it would be. With him in the meat of the order, then he can provide protection for Braun, which I hate that argument. But he can be a guy that can do that, and so can Hart, and when Ramirez turns the power on, he can be up in that three spot, so then he's getting better pitches because Braun's behind him.
Yeah, and I think the fact that, you know, not only does it, you know, help the offense, I think, you know, you put Weeks in the bottom part of the lineup with guys on and he scores those runs. Not only is, you know, Weeks himself getting more of those RBIs, he's helping the pitching out by, you know, expanding the lead or, you know, sizing the gap that we have if we're down. And that kind of production is crucial to especially the Brewers. And, you know, knowing where our bullpen has been, you know, these past two, almost 3 weeks now, we need that tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to talk about Weeks leading off, he's leading off today if you're keeping tabs of the game, which is not televised, by the way. Weeks is currently 1-for-3 with 2 strikeouts.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Weeks is he strikes out quite frequently, which is why I don't think he should be a leadoff hitter, because you want your leadoff hitter to be a contact hitter.
I mean, you need him to move the ball.
I mean, that's, you know, thinking of leadoff hitters, you know, going to the Yankees, you know, Derek Jeter has obviously been on a tremendous tear. But the thing about Jeter was, you know, last year I think he hit all 6 home runs, but he got on base all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's able to score with, you know, Granderson and Teixeira and, you know, Cano behind him because he was a contact hitter that got on base. Ricky Weeks is a power hitter that needs to be down farther in the lineup and not, you know, towards the front. We need Gamble up there for the time being. And I think we could even flirt with the idea of putting Nori up there, you know, or maybe Alex, you know, Gonzalez, some guy who can get on base, whether it be via walks or hits or getting hit, but, you know, any way they can get on.
Well, if you want someone to get hit, then you call in Nigel Morgan. Yes. I've never seen anyone take one for the team like Tony Plush does.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, I like Nigel Morgan, I really do. He adds such a great, you know, atmosphere into our clubhouse. You know, he has, you know, just, he makes baseball fun.
He does.
But that's all great, but if you can't contribute, you're going to be benched. You know, and I think until Morgan can prove again, like he did in the postseason last year, you know, game 5 against, you know, the Diamondbacks, being that clutch, you know, Tony Clutch, Tony Plush.
Right.
I think Nori wins the job in center easily over him or Gomez, because Gomez wasn't even a starter. Gomez was the backup, you know, and then he became kind of the, you know, he'll play half the time, and then Morgan will play half the time, and then we got Nori, and I think Nori deserves to play center, because he's shown not only in Japan that he can play, but, you know, I think he'll be able to show over here, because that's the difference between Japanese pitchers and Japanese hitters, is Japanese hitters usually can live up to it. Ichiro, Hideki Matsui, they've lived up to it. I think Nori can as well.
Right, absolutely. And I think Nigel Morgan will come around, and I think what a lot of people don't understand is he really does understand the dynamics going on around his swing right now, around his play, and around his place on the team. He understands that he's a guy that needs to make something happen if he's going to be a part of that team. You know, and he will put it together eventually, but he knows he's not Ryan Braun. He's not like an elite superstar player. But he's the guy who's going to put it together for the team, you know? And I think that's important for a lot of people to realize.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more like you said, Morgan does realize that, and he knows where his role is, not only in the lineup, but inside the clubhouse itself. So I think I don't want to lose Nigel Morgan, I'll say that much. I think he's great to have, and I think every team needs a Nigel Morgan, because, you know, that gets a lot of chemistry flowing with your players.
Yeah.
So, you know, and talking about, you know, people that are very, you know, beneficial to their team, talking about Saturday's, you know, White Sox game, Philip Humber throwing that perfect game. Congratulations again to Philip Humber for that. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize about Philip Humber is even last season, he was still pretty good. And, you know, that perfect game obviously almost was the second perfect game thrown, because Matt Cain had that one that was broken up by James McDonald from the Pirate, the pitcher. So obviously his is the first this season, and the first one since Roy Halladay's in 2010. And, you know, obviously not a very easy task. Almost lost it with the first batter in the ninth. And then the Brendan Ryan swing, you know, which they said they don't think he went afterwards. But, you know, who cares? He got the perfect game.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that was, you know, nine strikeouts through the whole game. It was, I mean, it was a good game. It was a solid. Yeah, well, it was perfect. I mean, what else can you say about it, really?
Yeah.
And going on your point too, yes, he was very good last year as well, and that's because, well, I mean, bad pitchers don't pitch perfect games, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Halliday, Randy Johnson, David Cohn, you name it, they pitched a perfect game. Sandy Koufax, you go throughout history. So, I mean,
right.
And the thing about, you know, the White Sox is I think their pitching will turn it around this year. Peavy just threw a, you know, complete game shutout against the A's. You know, Gavin Floyd, I believe he won last night. He's done fairly well. John Danks is kind of the top man in the rotation. Then you have the guy who was the rookie last year who almost had a perfect game as well, and Zach Stewart. So, I mean, you know, the White Sox, you know, bullpen providing, need, you know, I think they've kind of figured it out what's wrong. And I think it's just more or less the offense that needs to pick it up. You know, obviously, Pierzynski's, you know, a constant force. Canerco, Alexi Ramirez. And then the outfield, you know, the addition of Kosuke Fukudome can add a lot, you know, losing Carlos Quentin, and then Alex Rios and Alejandro Deaza. And so, I mean, right now, I believe they're tied with Cleveland and Detroit for first in the Central.
Yeah.
Which is thinking of Cleveland, how are they getting there? But that's another story for another time. But, you know, I think the White Sox have, you know, have improved, and I think Humber's perfect game could set them in that right direction for the rest of the season. And I can say that, you know, because that type of performance changes the team completely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a perfect game is one of those things that really sets the attitude for the team going forward, saying, like, we can do this. This is the type of team that we want to be. And going off of that, I did want to bring something in really quickly from last night from the minor leagues in Milwaukee. In the Brevard County Manatees in the Florida State League, they're the Advanced A minor league team. Hiram Burgos had the worst possible loss you could ever think of. He had a perfect game through six and then kept a no-hitter going until the bottom of the ninth. They got one hit off of him, and it earned him a run, which gave him the loss.
Oh my God! You know,
a 9-inning one hitter with 9 strikeouts and 1 walk, and he gets the loss. Can you think of a tougher thing to go through as a pitcher?
No, not really. I mean, I've seen guys, you know, who haven't given up a run and still lost. And that's, you know, it's just as frustrating. But to have a perfect game through six innings and then a no-hitter later on and then just you lose the game because you gave up one hit. I mean, he probably destroyed the Gatorade machine. You know, that is frustrating for a pitcher.
About it.
Because
he was pretty calm about it.
Yeah, I mean, from what we see, but, you know, behind closed doors, who knows what really happens. You know, I'm sure he composed himself really well about it. You know, that reminds me of Jonathan Sanchez a few years ago, I think in 2009, basically had a perfect game, only he ended up getting a no-hitter because Juan Uribe screwed up a throw. Other than that, he would have had a perfect game.
Right.
So, I mean, it's things like that that I think, you know, pitchers go, crap!
Exactly.
I'm close. You know, I'll never get that chance again, but unless you're Randy Johnson, of course, but...
Right.
But, you know, and then talking about pitching performances, you know, last week we talked about between Cespedes and Darvish. I think last night kind of proved that Darvish took the lead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Darvish officially arrived last night. He got a standing ovation from one Mr. Nolan Ryan,
and
which...
Those don't come easy.
Exactly.
You know, and because I had to work last night, I was kind of mad about that, and I got home about, you know, 10, and I think it was a... like seventh or eighth inning, and I got to see Darvish pitch the rest of it until they took him out and put Joe Nathan in. And I don't, right. I don't really think Washington should have taken Darvish out at all. I mean, it's the ninth inning with one out. And you allow, I think it was Swisher to get on. You allow one guy to get on. the very next pitch that Ibanez hits turns into a double play. Joe Nathan only pitched one pitch. Darvish right. pitched one pitch and had his first complete game shutout against the Yankees.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things, like, what if, who knows what could happen. I mean, you leave it to the manager's discretion for that. And any pitcher would tell you that, yeah, if he didn't think I had the stuff, it's probably better that I left. But it would have been, I mean, it would have been a great story for, the sports media who's crazy about the Yankees and crazy about Darvish. So.
Yeah, and I think the thing that Darvish does still need to work on, and he worked on it tremendously last night, was his control. Because, yeah, he has a 3-0 record and a 2.42 ERA, but his whip is 1.58. And that is accredited to the fact that he has walked 15 people already. He walked only two batters last night, but the three games before that, his three other starts, he walked four, and then five. You know, the game against Detroit, he only allowed two hits, which is pretty good, facing Detroit. He only allowed two hits. And he only allowed seven last night, but he struck out 10.
Right, and that was the impressive part, because one of the things I actually like about Darvish is he's quickly finding a better command of his breaking stuff, which is something that a lot of Japanese pitchers have problems with because they work with a more compact ball where the laces are very close together.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can have these brilliant breaking balls that a lot of American pitchers just don't have, just in terms of the action on the ball. When they move to America, it can be a little bit harder for them to control that ball. But he's done very, very well with that, and he showed it a lot.
Yeah, because he actually said himself that he had been training the past 3 years before the Rangers, scouted him and said, well, hey, we're going to give you all this money if you just talk to us. He actually had been practicing 3 years ago with an American-sized baseball, trying to get his pitches, all lined up on that. And I think that credits a lot, because when people said, oh, he's just going to be the next Dice K or something, I don't see that coming from Darvish. I honestly think he'll live up to the hype. I really do, because the fact that he's been able to get off to this start so far, and the fact that Texas, in general, has been able to get off to this great start so far, is just amazing. And I think it builds a lot of confidence not only for Darvish, but I think it builds a lot of confidence for Texas in general.
Yeah, and the thing to remember about Darvish is, where Aoki is 30, or around 30, Darvish is only 25.
Yeah, I mean,
he's turning 25 this year.
No, he is 25.
He is 25, okay.
I mean, he pitched seven years since he was 18, right out of high school, in the Japanese leagues, and did tremendous. He's basically considered, like, the Cy Young in Japan. I'm not even exaggerating there. He is, like, literally that good. And, I actually might have the chance to actually see him pitch, because he's actually coming to Cleveland, because I live about an hour away from Cleveland. And he's the Texas is coming up here, I think next weekend.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to, say, well, maybe he might pitch and I'll be able to get to see him. I'm hoping he's going to pitch in that series. I really do, because I would love to see him pitch in real life. But, the fact that he's been able to neutralize, the bats of Prince Fielder, Miguel Cabrera, Robinson Cano, Mark Teixeira, Alex Rodriguez so far is pretty impressive. And, even like guys like Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau when he faced Minnesota. So, I mean, he obviously still has a lot of teams to face, and he has a lot of, time to get used to pitching in America. But coming into the season, Darvish will probably end up being the number one in that rotation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he's there, and I think he's got plenty of room to improve still. Obviously with his command, his high level of walks. But, I think he'll get there. I really do.
Yeah, I it just kind of makes me wonder, like, what if the Brewers had gotten him? And I know that's a huge, that's never going to happen. That never would have happened anyway. But,
right.
It'd be nice to think about.
We never would have got the posting fees for him.
We'd have to give up, like, half our team. Here, we have half our team.
Yeah.
We can have Darvish now. But, and it's impressive to see what he's been able to do so far. And on, the other side of that, looking at, a guy going to another team, a much-hated rival of the Rangers, talking about the Angels' Albert Pujols, you know, switching leagues. You know, everybody thought, well, he's, you know, going to be great, hit 30 home runs again, and he hasn't even hit a single one this year.
No, he hasn't. This is, it's not the longest streak that he's gone without a home run in his career, but it's up there.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people fail to realize is, you know, oh yeah, we have, you know, Pujols for the next 10 years. Just say that sentence again and realize what you just said. Pujols is like 31.
Pujols is 31, yeah, yes.
You know, he's already had the best years he's going to have, you know, since 2001. It's 2012 now. You know, obviously he's still going to be a very, you know, a very good force in that lineup, you know, adding, you know, a lot of, you know, home runs throughout, you know, the rest of the time he plays, and, you know, doubles and home run, and I already said home runs, doubles and maybe even triples if he can still manage the speed. But, you know, right now, I don't know what's going on with Albert.
Right. It's a slow start, you know? I mean, sometimes these things happen. It's funny how we try to, how people try to pick apart things like this a lot, mainly just because there's so much going on in the mind of a baseball player, and there's so much going on around him during the game that it's hard to say, like, oh, well, if he does this, you know, then he'll get better. Maybe he's not getting a whole lot of pitches in the strike zone, so he's chasing a lot, you know? Maybe he's just not getting solid wood on the ball. It's really hard to tell, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it's surprising to see it from a guy like Pujols because, you know, he's always been, you know, one of the most feared hitters in baseball. And, you know, the fact that the Angels are 6-11, you know, and they got, you know, C.J. Wilson and Pujols, you know, it's going to add to their pitching and their offense. You know, Kendrys Morales is coming back and blah, 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 blah. And none of it's helping. None of it's helping at all. And, you know, if this is one of those slow starts the team does have, and we've seen it before. But they fall too far behind Texas, who's 14-4 right now. They're never going to catch up.
You know, and that may be true. That may be true that they'll never get there. But it's hard to say. I mean, and when Albert Pujols does turn it on, which he will, I can guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When he does, the Angels are going to be a tough team. It's just a matter of when that's going to happen. Because he's not the only one there who can hit. And, you know, they still have Dan Heron. They stole our middle relief. You know, they have pitchers. They have Jared Weaver as well. It's not like they're not a bad team. They're going to get there. It's just going to take them a little longer to catch up. And again, it's not like Albert Pujols isn't making a contribution. He's only hitting .232 right now, but he has 7 doubles out of 16 hits, by the way. 4 RBIs. He's been walked 7 times, twice intentionally, and he struck out, you know, 9 out of 69 at-bats. He's there. He just isn't turning it into power yet. And, I mean, maybe it's a changing course for Pujols, and maybe he won't be the amazing home run hitter he was for the next 10 years, but maybe he'll be a really productive contact hitter.
Yeah, and it's really hard to tell with him because, you know, obviously the whole thing last year, you know, Cardinals postseason run was very, very, you know, due to David Freese and John Jay and Skip Schumacher and Matt Holliday before he was out. And guys like that, and it wasn't really necessarily all of Pujols. And that's the thing I kind of noticed. So maybe his slump may have started there, to where the fact that, oh, we're in the World Series, and, you know, and then, because a lot of guys do shut down when it comes to the postseason. We've seen that. So maybe he's still trying to get from that point and move on. It's really hard to tell with a power hitter like Pujols, because you know he's not going to be like this for the rest of his, you know, career. He's not going to be as productive as he was, but he's not going to be, you know, 20 home runs or even like 15 home runs and 70 RBIs and 60 runs scored. He's not going to go to that, certainly.
Right.
So.
Right. They'll turn it around, though.
Definitely. You know, and last bit, the last thing I want to talk about is something I actually plan on writing on my own blog about was Steven Strasburg. And I really don't think there's a better pitcher below the age of 25 in the game right now. I'll even say 26. That's better than Steven Strasburg.
He's good, that's for sure. I like Strasburg a lot. I've liked him for a long time. I was concerned about him that they were going to, you know, tear his arm off just to get fans in the seats. Well, you know, they brought him up quick, and then they brought him up again after he had Tommy John surgery before he was done with all his rehab starts. And that's a scary thing to do to a pitcher, especially one that young. But boy, he is turning it on this year, and he seems to be the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to watch him pitch because, excuse me, you know, right now he's 2-0 with a 1.08 ERA. You know, we can always say, well, that's, you know, amazing, but, you know, like we said, it's early in the season still. But the fact that, you know, Washington themselves have turned around their pitching, and Strasburg is the face of that. You know, he did well before he had his Tommy John surgery, and then they're still concerned he might do the same thing with his elbow again, because the way he pitches, he has that inverted W stance. So they're afraid he might do that again, and it's very well possible he could. But then again, you know, these are the same people that are saying, well, you know, Tim Lincecum is going to, you know, throw his arm out or something like that, and it's never happened. You know,
right. So I trust the people that are watching him pitch every day, you know, with the Nationals, to understand how he delivers and how it affects his arm. I trust there are people involved in that that are much better than the people that are watching him do it on TV.
Yeah, and, you know, Strasburg's next start does come against the Dodgers, and it's kind of a test because the Dodgers have been doing fairly well. So, I mean, he has pitched, you know, against some, I don't want to say slack teams, but, I mean, he pitched against Chicago, pitched against the Mets, pitched against Houston, and he pitched against Miami. So, I mean, Miami can turn it around, I believe. Miami has the talent. They just don't put it together.
Right.
Houston has talent, but they're young, and they're still maturing into the game. The Mets are just a mess. And Chicago kind of has, like, you know, Soriano and Darwin Barney and Starlin Castro and Giovanni Soto. But it's hard to tell. And I'm not saying Strasburg, you know, he always only pitched against easy teams, because he hasn't. He's pitched against, you know, teams prior to this that have fairly decent lineups. You know, and being in the NL East, you know, he's going to face Philly, he's going to face the Braves, he's going to face the Marlins again. So it's not going to be all, you know, rainbows and sunshine from here on. He's going to face, you know, real hitters, and I think, you know, he can attest that. He can do very well against these hitters because he's, you know, fooled people thus far, you know, into, you know, falling for a lot of his pitches, because he is a strikeout pitcher, let's face it. He gets five or more a game. So, and I think what attests to that as well is his low whip. He has a whip of .92.
Right. Right, and he's never, I mean, he's never had, his highest was, I think in the minors, and that was like a 189. Ever since then, he's posted under one, in the major leagues, so.
Yeah, and, you know, hopefully that injury never happens again to Strasburg. I would never want to see it happen to any pitcher. But,
right.
But, you know, I think he's going to do fine from here on out. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that concludes this week's episode. Stay tuned for next week's episode. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.